May it please the court, Bruce Lehman for Shandi Hefner and Kiabi Ule LLC. This is essentially a Nolan and Dolan land use exaction case.
Who owns the land?
Yeah, the question of the hour.
The allegation of the complaint is that we own the land and the state of Hawaii has no interest in it.
But that's yet to be determined. And isn't that a state law question that has to be determined by a state court?
With all due respect, no, Judge Trott. There are several reasons for that. First of all, there's absolutely no... If the question goes to the issue of Pullman abstention, there's no unsettled issue of state law. The state law is clear that in order to for the state to try to invoke the provisions of the Highways Act, that there has to be some kind of... That they have the burden of showing, first of all, that there was a road there, and second of all, that it was abandoned. There's no permission for the court to indulge in a presumption in favor of that. I think that's particularly true in the procedural status the case was under with the with essentially the court ruling on a motion to dismiss, where there was no evidence presented, and by the state's admission, they concede that they don't present any evidence to show that there was a road there or that a road was abandoned.
Well, I guess my question, well, this is a very procedurally odd context for this, especially your takings claim to have arisen, because it seems to me we do need to know who owns the property to adjudicate that issue. So why couldn't the federal court have an evidentiary hearing on the question of, as a predicate to determining the Fifth Amendment issue, as to who owns the road?
Well, I think that would be an issue that the court could entertain. But part of our point, Judge Wardlaw, is that our damages are exactly the same regardless of who owns the road, because the damages that we claim, we're not asking for just compensation. What we're asking for is the damages that we have suffered as a result of the state imposing an unconstitutional condition on us, which consists.
If the state owns the road, then maybe it's not unconstitutional for them to be requiring you to be going through all these permit proceedings and adhering to the state rules for maintenance of the road.
Well, I think it is unconstitutional regardless, Your Honor, and the reason is that under Nolan and Dolan, if you impose a condition, it has to be going to a point that would have entitled you to deny the permit in the first place.
But those cases are dependent upon an uncontested ownership by the private landowner. And we don't know whether the state actually owns the easement across the property. That's a question of state law, and at this point we don't know. And in fact, as I read that condition 13, it talks about, well, if the state owns the land, then we will figure out where the easement goes. But it's premised upon a determination that the state owns the land. Your Dolan Nolan claims are premised upon your owning the land.
Well, yes, and as I say, that's our
question. The question is Judge Trott's question: who owns the land?
Right. I understand that is a question, and it may be that the judge would have to determine that question.
Now, which judge? Is there any sort of a quiet title action or anything pending in front of the district court?
No, there is no quiet title action pending, and frankly, I don't conceive of our complaint as requiring a determination of that issue.
But it can't be a taking unless you own it.
Well, Judge, there is nothing in the record to suggest that there is any doubt as to whether we own the property.
Oh, yes, there is. Statements that you don't own it, and there's the Highway Act, and we don't know its implications. I mean, I'm back to thinking, okay, so the state hasn't done what it's supposed to do under the Highway Act. Your client hasn't filed something to quiet title. So those would be the two state things. So what we have here is a federal complaint in order to assess the claims other than the ones that I think have absolutely no merit at all. the judge has to know or determine who owns the property.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think that's correct because, but I don't have any problem if Judge Ezra decides on remand that's a task that he should undertake. In any event, it shouldn't be subject to Pullman abstention because there is no unsettled issue of state law.
I agree with you on Pullman abstention not being the appropriate way to go here. Just struggling with what is the appropriate way to go in this posture that we're in.
You're absolutely right, Judge. There is a claim. The state does in their opposition papers make a claim to ownership of the property. But my point is that in the posture of a motion to dismiss, where the allegation is that we own it, the record as developed by the administrative reports filed by the defendants indicates that the reason that they are fining us is because we own the property. When we make the allegation that they don't own the property, and then when they decline to present any evidence, which they concede to having done, that they own the property, then
it seems like a game that they're playing, because you're right, they can only assess you these fines if it's your property, yet they're also saying it's their property at the same time.
Well, and Your Honor, and our allegation is that it's pretextual because this is something that's being done all up and down the coast on the Big Island of Hawaii, which is the sending of letters to landowners saying, oh, by the way, there's a trail across your property and that we claim ownership of it. But then in terms of the actual evidence, which is, as I say, number one, was there a road? And number two, the statute sets up two possible ways that they could own the road. One is that it had been dedicated to them, which requires a formal dedication procedure and acceptance. I don't think anybody has said that applies. Or that there's been an abandonment. An abandonment consists of basically no exercise of any aspect of ownership over the road for a five-year period. So there's nothing that they have not alluded to anything to show that exists. So,
can I ask you a question? Your client purchased the 166 acres land
in 1999. Yeah.
And wouldn't there necessarily have been a title report done in connection with that purchase?
Yes, there was a title
and
report.
Could you submit the title report to show evidence? I mean, if the state owned the road, certainly they would show that the title had that pinned on it, or they'd show an easement in the report.
Well, certainly that would be part of our proof with respect to our ownership of the property. Yeah, the state's position, as they articulated, this isn't in the record, but what they said was, well, we found an old map of an area miles south of your property, which refers to a shoreline trail heading north, and then they also say, and on the land court application for the Ahupua'a that is immediately south of yours, we find reference to a road. And that road, you can tell from the title report, goes up the hill. That was the Hawaiian way of utilizing the land, was basically to go mountains to sea up the Ahupua'a. So the roads tended to run in that direction. When you look at the record of this road, what they refer to it as the Jeep Road. The Jeep, invented in the 1940s in connection with World War II. So, Your Honor, it is something that I think that, particularly in this procedural posture, we're at least entitled to the benefit of the doubt under the settled Hawaii law.
If we were to agree with Judge Ezra, and I share Judge Wardlaw's hesitation about Pullman, but let me entertain this for a moment. If we were to agree with Judge Ezra that Pullman abstention is appropriate, what proceedings would take place in the state, either state court or state administrative proceeding, that would then resolve the question as to ownership of a road or an easement or some passageway, which would then allow the district judge, after that's determined, to figure out, okay, well, all they have is an easement for a path, and they claim a road. They're trying to put a condition on a road when all they have, you know. But once we know that, then we can actually look at a Nolan Dolan sort of claim. But if we do abstain under Pullman, what's going to happen in the state proceedings?
Any? Well, there are no state proceedings pending at this point. So one side or the other would have to initiate some kind of proceeding to...
In the action of a quiet title?
Quiet title would be one form of it, yeah. And,
now, Pullman, in its ordinary form, does not require that there be a state act, state proceeding now pending. It can be conditioned upon one being instituted.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor, but there is the requirement that there be a sensitive issue of land use policy and that there be an unsettled question of state law.
Is this one of those situations where nobody wants an answer?
Yeah.
Well, it's a situation where obviously litigation is a very expensive proposition, and I at this point the state has not come in and said, has not tried to enforce what they claim to be our rights, so we have continued to enjoy the privacy and our rights to exclude others.
So you're kind of hoping maybe the state files some kind of a proceeding to quiet title?
We're hoping that they will drop the matter. That's
what
we're
hoping they live
out. Right? Yeah. Well, that's, to be perfectly candid, that's what we hope.
Yeah. Okay. You can reserve the rest of your time. Let's hear what the state has to say about
this.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. William Weinhoff, Deputy Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the state. With respect to our claim of ownership of the trail, the state does, in fact, claim that it owns the trail under Chapter 264, which is the present version of the Highways Act of 1892. The state so stated in its concise statement of material facts filed pursuant to the local rules, and that's in the excerpt of the record at page 83.
And what can you do? What avenues are available to you to establish the viability of that claim?
We could file an action for quiet title in state court.
Why don't you?
We typically don't file that because there's lots of instances in which trails may or may not come about, and we prefer to have the other side file quiet title actions.
So each side is looking at the other across the 48th parallel, and nothing has happened.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And the appropriate action is, as Mr. Lehman said, is plaintiff is using it right now. As long as we don't think we need to use it, we're not going to file a quiet title action. If he doesn't want to file a quiet title action, that's no problem. The problem is they got no business being in federal court. The issue. So anyway, there's no question.
There is. I don't know how real or concrete or imminent is the threat of a $2,000 a day fine for doing repairs to a road that arguably she owns.
Thank you, Your Honor. You know, obviously we practiced this in my office and we thought about it, and I was going to start off my argument with that because that is a red herring that needs to be put to bed. Period. The $2,000 day fine, what plaintiff's briefs do is they blur the distinction between the three actions that the board took in attempt to raise this issue, which is absolutely a non-issue and has not been an issue for several years. The first board action was August 1999, excerpts of the record 258, fined Hefter $1,300 and ordered her to file a conservation district use application seeking a conservation district use permit. The second board action was in February 2003, at which time the board ordered to pay a fine of $607 and submit a CDUA, which she had done but hadn't been accepted. At that time, this is February 2003, the board threatened to impose fines of $2,000 a day if she did not comply. Well, did not comply with what? File a CDUA and pay the fines. That's in the excerpts of records at 162-163. But she did comply. She paid the fines, and she filed the CDUA.
And it was
she
accepted?
Alleged that herself, and that's in the excerpts of the record at page ER 140, paragraph 36.
And the CDUA was accepted? There were no procedural or substantive
problems? That's correct, Your Honor. Absolutely correct.
So all the business about the continuing fine goes away?
Yes. It went away. Now, what happened the third time that they came around is they granted her the CDUP, okay, the permit. She filed the application, CDUA, and they granted her the CDUP, the permit. But they said the CDUP will go away if you don't comply with all these conditions. So
condition
the CDUP
13.
Could have gone away.
Right, but that's the one where the condition 13 came in that basically says even though you may own the property, we can use it for any purpose we want. For public access or the Alamoa Road?
I'm sorry, I didn't really understand the court's question.
So the condition 13,
right?
That's attached to the third CDP.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And condition 13 might as well be we're taking your road.
That's what they says it. That's what
well,
they says
it
is.
Too, and it looks that way.
Well, we said it's not, Your Honor, and that's one
well,
of the reasons.
That's your, the state keeps saying things by fiat in this case. If
right.
you interpret it, it's condition 13. It says
I understand.
That it's open for all public access, and it can be used as part of this trail that the state's contemplating building.
That's one of the reasons we're not should be in state court, Your Honor. Williamson specifically tells us that we have two prongs of it. One is we got to go to state court first to find out what the state really did. And we say we didn't. They say we did. I mean, I understand you read it. I read it, too, and I can certainly understand the way the court reads it. But we have emphatically said we're not trying to take it. If it's yours, you can have it.
We get to use it, or the public gets to use it.
Well, you know, bottom line, Judge Trott, that Condition 13 is very inartfully worded, should not have been in there, is a big mistake, and it's just basically, I agree with plaintiff on this. It was very heavy-handed, and the state hasn't really looked good in this
well,
case.
Well, have you withdrawn it then? Have you taken it out of this?
Because we have this litigation.
Well, but if you're acknowledging that it's heavy-handed, overreaching, and shouldn't be in there, maybe you wouldn't have this litigation if you took it out.
We tried to settle it. I don't really want to get into settlement discussion.
I'm not asking you to get into settlement. But so now you've acknowledged to the court that that is an overreaching, heavy-handed, and unsupported condition.
If it's read that way, okay? If it's read that way, the way we have always said it's read is, we think we own it, and we'd like to work with you to find an alignment for it. And
find
their
a,
reaction,
find a what for?
An alignment for it.
I don't know
it,
what that word means.
Because we don't know where it even is.
Oh, alignment for
it's
the road.
There. We believe that there's a trail. Let me just go back to the Highways Act for a second, because the Highways Act has been improperly quoted or explained to this court. The Highways Act, where it's now 264-1, has several parts. Part C says if a road is laid out by a private party, then it only becomes owned by the state if it's abandoned or dedicated. But Part A says, 160 says, if the state laid it out, then we own it. And we've always owned it. And that's where we are. So the argument that it has to be abandoned or dedicated is just simply wrong. It's a wrong reading of 264.1, and it misses the point of the statute.
Now, let me understand what your reading of Condition 13 is. Let me just do the language first. It reads, upon determining a reasonable location of the state-owned Alamoa, the appellant shall work directly with da-da-da to establish a final alignment of the Alamoa and to establish public access. And your reading of that clause?
My reading of that is that you can't... You can't determine a reasonable location until you find out who owns it.
That is to say, you're saying of the state-owned Alamoa, that's on the premise that it has been established that the state
Correct.
Owns it.
That's right, Your Honor. And that's also...
And in your reading, it doesn't come into operation until there has been some sort of an authoritative determination
that's right.
that the state owns it.
That's right, Your Honor. And
so
I would also...
And your reading is to make sure...
Yes, sir.
You're
sir.
Not reading any acceptance of Condition 13 by the landowner, the overall landowner, as any concession of state ownership.
Absolutely not, Your Honor. It's very clear that they say they don't own it. The record also indicates where they had the colloquy between counsel and between the board, that's at ER 65, that basically what the board is saying, look, we think we own it. The AGs are telling us we own it. I mean, it wasn't me, but somebody's telling them that they own it. And we understand that you don't, but we have to assert our claim just like you have to assert your claim.
If we uphold Judge Ezra, what happens?
If you uphold Judge Ezra, what happens is what Judge Ezra told them to do is they told the plaintiffs to file a quiet title action. And so they'll have to go back and file a quiet title action. I would say also, Your Honor, I mean, I think this is another area where plaintiffs and I and the state agree. Given now the court's decision in Lingle, I think the case has a stake through its heart. Judge Ezra was saying, look, we still got this substantially advances test. And given the substantially advances test, I got to find out who owns the property. But now that the substantially advances test has a stake through its heart, they're left with the Nolan Dolan improper exaction case. And basically, the only thing they're saying is, under Nolan and Dolan, You can get some remedy other than just compensation. Well, that's just wrong again. Lingle says, and a million other cases say, Judge Trott was on the panel of Daniel, which I believe said basically the same thing, and I quoted it in my brief, is the only remedy for an improper taking is just compensation, in federal court anyway, and that's... There isn't any exception for illegal exaction. Illegal exaction is simply a type of regulatory taking. What happened in Nolan, I was thinking about this further because it was a little puzzling, and I don't think plaintiffs grasp the implication of the fact that both Nolan and Dolan came up from the state system. What happened in Nolan is the court said no, it wasn't illegal exaction, and so then they went over to the court and the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said yes, it was, and they simply reversed. The reason they didn't remand in Nolan is because in California at the time there wasn't any inverse condemnation proceeding. It had been just 3 weeks before that the United States Supreme Court had decided First English, in which First English and Agins both acknowledged at the time California Supreme Court in Agins said there isn't any inverse condemnation. There was a discussion of that in the Supreme Court's case. Then in First English, the same thing had happened. The California Supreme Court had said again that there was no inverse condemnation case, and they just threw it out. In First English, they said, well, there can be a temporary taking, as I'm sure you know. But anyway, the point is that in Nolan, the Supreme Court in California had said, this is not an illegal exaction case. So the case, that was it. Then when they appealed to the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court said, it is an illegal exaction, and so therefore the only remedy, because in California there was no inverse condemnation proceeding, they just said it's reversed and it's done with. In Dolan, what they did is they remanded it to the Oregon courts to figure out, well, what are they going to do? Are they going to pursue just compensation? Are they going to change the regulation? So, basically that's the plaintiff's argument. They said it is an illegal exaction case, which first of all it isn't. It's a quiet title case, and second of all, they said we alleged it below, which they didn't. Absolutely never did they argue it below. And third, even if we get past those possibilities, it's Williamson County all the way.
Now, I've got two. I mean, it seems as though there are possibly two different disputes going on here. The first one is what it started out to be, which was to say, for at least one brief shining moment, from the plaintiff's standpoint, the state assumed that she owned the land, but she simply needed a permit if she's going to cut some stuff, put gravel on it, and so on. That's one dispute. Do you need a permit if you're in the conservation district to improve a road that belongs to you?
Let me just respond to that, Your Honor, because I know that came up before, and the answer is yes, absolutely. You can't do anything in the conservation district.
So that's the permit. First dispute.
Okay.
Then we get a second dispute where the state starts to claim, well, and you know what? It may or may not be along the path of where the Jeep road runs, but, you know, we own an easement across your land.
Right.
And somehow you guys have managed to conflate these two fights.
Well, I guess I'm going to say, Your Honor, and maybe I'm being unhumble or something, but I don't think I've conflated them. I think the plaintiff is trying to conflate them.
Well, but why do we have this condition 13 in one of the use permits then?
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Maybe I guess I'm being defensive. It's arguable, if you read it the way that plaintiffs do, that the department has conflated them.
But we
say they haven't. And that's Williamson County. You got to go back and figure out what they are saying. They can't just come to federal court and say, this is what you did. I mean, it's kind of an anomaly. They're going to come in and say, you did this and we didn't do that. That's the first prong of Williamson County. You got to go sort that out in the state court. And we said we didn't.
And geographically, it occurs to me, at least as I read these papers, that the location of the Alaloa may actually be at some substantial distance from the so-called Jeep Road.
Right, but that would make no difference. Really, the two should not be.
First off, is that right? That is to say, the Alaloa may be located in some place quite different from where the Jeep Road is.
It could be different. I don't know about considerably different. It depends what you mean. I mean, but it's going to be close to the ocean.
But the Jeep Road and the Alaloa may be two separate paths.
That's right. That's possible.
So there really seems to me, too, you know, these are two different fights.
I agree with you.
It doesn't sound as though you're arguing that the Jeep Road is the Alaloa.
What the state is saying and what I'm saying is that there's an Alaloa there somewhere. I don't know.
It might be the Jeep Road.
Yeah, might be.
And it might be out in the ocean.
Well, that was their argument. They used canoes to go by it.
You just don't know.
It might not be there at all.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. But what I do know is, or what I believe I know is, it shouldn't be in federal court. I beg your pardon.
All right. Does anybody have any other questions?
Your Honor, I guess I have 6 seconds left. But you know, I mean, the allusion has been to the other parts of the claims not having that much merit, and I agree with that. I do want to say, though, that it is very important. I mean, who I represent here is I represent the state. I represent official capacity defendants, and I represent individual human beings who were sued for a really wide range and very deleterious set of things, including RICO, none of which have the slightest amount of merit. And regardless of what happens with respect to the rest of the taking, whether it goes back or proceeds or however it proceeds, wherever it goes, we really strongly urge the court to affirm the decision below that the rest of these claims against these people individually must, can, and should be and remain dismissed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
The people that counsel refers to are the people who actually knew that there was no nexus between this condition and the application that was before them and went ahead anyway. That's a point that we make in our brief that Defendant John specifically talked about. So when we have a situation where it's not just the defendant proceeding, knowing that there has to be a nexus and knowing that there is no nexus, and then in addition, and we have this cited for the record, with the threat that if we did not turn over the road, that it would that we'd be subject to a $2,000 a day fine retroactively, then we think that those individuals should be responsible.
When you
for
say
it.
Not turn over the road, now do you mean the Jeep Road, or do you mean some easement across the property?
Thank you. That's correct, Judge Fletcher. It is whatever this alignment is that the state has required us to do.
Well, the state has required you to do if it's determined that they own the property.
Well. I'm very happy that counsel says that, and I'm very happy that he said below that we're not going to collect the $2,000 a day fine. But it certainly has the earmarks of a situation where after we sue, all of a sudden it's kind of like we're a wide receiver going for the ball and the cornerback mugs us and then puts his hands up and or maybe sends us flowers afterwards. I think that the only reason that we are getting these concessions is because we have sued. But if I can get back to your other point, Judge Fletcher, about you know, the interpretation of the state saying that that's not the way that it should be interpreted. If you take a look at the next sentence in condition number 13, it says final alignment for the Alaloa and lateral public access shall be established within 3 months of the board's action on this matter. And again, the Alaloa is what they refer to as the state-owned Alaloa. So that's not a provision that gives us any comfort on its face that there's going to be a procedure invoked for trying to determine title to the property. This is
the second sentence that maybe particularly alarmed you, because that's assuming somehow that ownership can be authoritatively determined within 3 months.
Well, I don't think that was even contemplated, Your Honor. I think that was an after-the-fact position that they took after we filed suit and made the allegations that we've made.
Was that 3 months after January 27th, 2004?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
I guess that never happened.
No, that never happened.
So what exactly are you asking us to do, and what will you then do if we agree with you?
Well, basically asking for the reinstatement of the administrative appeal and the RICO claim, a reversal of the Pullman abstention. If it becomes necessary to try title in the federal court action, then obviously we would do that. But we basically ask that our our case be reinstated in its entirety so that we can pursue our claims and present our
You want the quiet title action in federal court?
Well, no. As I say, that's something that we would prove if we had to prove it, but our theory of the case is that it is the it is the imposition of the unconstitutional condition that has caused us damages, and that's what we're suing for.
If we affirm the Judge Thrift's decision, you're still going to be at stalemate, right? Because neither one of you is going to go into quiet title.
Well, counsel mentioned that Judge Ezra's order had required us to initiate a quiet title action. I didn't recall that. If that's correct,
I didn't read it that way either.
But if that's correct, then certainly we'll have to do that.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Hefner versus Young is submitted and.